Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and blessings, and welcome to another installment of the Gist for Freedom of Faith. This show is produced by acclaimed historian, educator, and author Leslie Gist, and serves as our weekly live online discussion to celebrate the African American experience by honoring all the people, past and present, black and white, who, with faith and focus, are preserving our rich history through literature, the arts, the skilled trades, and the humanities. We thank you for joining us tonight, and we'd love you to be a part of tonight's discussion by calling in with your comments or questions to 347-324-5552.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Gift of Freedom. My name is Preston Washington. I'm your host. Our subject matter for this evening's show is the Underground Railroad in Florida. I want to remind you that these shows are available free of charge via iTunes, and you can pick that up at www.blackhistoryuniversity.com. My guest tonight is Gilbert Rayford, and Mr. Rayford is here to talk to us about the operation of the Underground Railroad in the state of Florida. Good evening, Mr. Rayford.
Oh, good evening. How are you?
I'm fine. Tell our audience a little bit more about you.
About me?
Yes.
Well, I'm a retired social work professor. I'm a native of Florida, and then I live in Miami.
Okay. And the Underground Railroad in Florida, tell us about how that was different than the Underground Railroad that ran along from the south up to Philadelphia and through on through to Canada.
For one thing, it was 100 years older. It started back in the 1700s, and it started actually from South Carolina to Florida. Slaves were encouraged to run away from the plantations in South Carolina and in Savannah and other parts of Georgia and South Carolina, and they were given free accommodations there in Florida. They were made free by the Spanish government. The Spanish government at that time ruled Florida. That was their territory. And so what they did, they promised the slaves that if they could escape and come to Florida, to a place they had built called Fort Moses, that they would be free. Many slaves did run away, and they came and established the first free settlements for blacks in this country.
And what were those settlements established per se? Are any of them still in existence today and around?
No, they're not. Fort Moses was established around 1738, and it lasted only until 1763, when the British overran the fort and destroyed it. But in its place now is a museum which tells the history of the fort and the history of blacks that ran away from slavery into freedom to St. Augustine. It's in St. Augustine, Florida.
St. Augustine. And how
right. It's about 2 miles north of St. Augustine. But at that time, the whole area was called St. Augustine.
Yes. How many colonies altogether were in existence?
No, there was just only one. It was just a fort. And when they were when they were there, they built a city, but that was the only one there. Later on, when they were dispersed, when the British came and took over St. Augustine, many of them were taken to the Bahamas and to Cuba, along with the Spanish. But some remained in St. Augustine, and they developed another city called Lincolnville, which is still there, in St. Augustine.
Lincolnville.
Right.
Okay. Now, and this was during the period early in America's history where there were 13 colonies.
Exactly.
in the United States.
Florida was not a colony, right?
Florida was not a colony.
No, Florida was a territory of Spain. Spain had settled in Florida.
Okay. And so there were, these colonies were free. Now, what countries were involved in the slave trade?
Oh, gee. the British, of course. The British, the French, the Portuguese, the Spanish, the Germans. Most of those countries, yeah.
Yes. And all
none of Scandinavian countries.
And all these countries were importing slaves
into several parts of the Americas, not just Florida, but the Bahamas, the islands in the Caribbean, Central America, South America, Espanola.
Now, what's Espanola?
Well, that's an island that houses two nations. Haiti is one part of it, and the Dominican Republic is the other part. And so they also had slaves.
We're hearing that, you hear people say that Africans were here before Christopher Columbus. What's your opinion on that?
Well, actually, Africans came with Christopher Columbus. There were Africans on the boats with Christopher Columbus, and there were Africans that came with Ponce de Leon. So they were here before the Mayflower.
De Leon was here in the 1500s, is that correct?
Well, actually, Ponce de Leon was here more than one time. He came with Christopher Columbus on his second voyage. He was not with Christopher Columbus on his first voyage, but on the second voyage was a couple of years later. Ponce de Leon was on that voyage with him. Then he came back with his own fleet. And he brought blacks with him, too, Africans with him, too, as a matter of fact. In my article, if you read it, he mentioned one of the blacks that one of the Africans that he brought, came in and started the wheat farm that we began to plant wheat in this country because he brought that that skill and that method of farming to the United States. Well, actually, to the new nation.
What was her connection to the Moors from Africa, and what connection did the Moors have to Fort Mose?
Well, as you know, the Moors were primarily in the Spanish, Italian, Portuguese area. And so they became part of the society for the Hispanics and Italians and the Portuguese. So they traveled with them as well. And, of course, there was no racism then. So if they were free, they could travel and make lives for themselves the same as the whites did. And some of them did. They settled here as free people.
Okay. So,
yeah, go ahead. Even before slavery, there were free blacks here in this country.
Okay, that was what I was kind of wanting to get to in terms of, because you mentioned that slaves were escaping from South Carolina and Georgia. So, and they were escaping.
Oh, no, they were all over the colonies, but those were the colonies that were closer to Florida. Those that came to Fort Mose came mainly from Georgia and from South Carolina. Of course, there were Africans who were brought over, or being brought over, by the British. And before they could be made into slaves, some of them were captured. The ships were captured by the Spain. And they were also taken to Fort Mose and freed.
Were any of the colonies anti-slavery, Vermont, for example?
Oh, yeah, in the beginning, I guess some of them were, the northern colonists were, or they were not as involved in slavery as the southern colonists were. Mm-hmm. But we had slaves in New York, you had slaves even in Massachusetts, and some of the New England states had slaves.
Let's see.
I'm trying to think of a colony where there were no slaves, and I can't think of one.
And during that period, was there a difference between chattel slavery and indentured servants?
Oh, yeah, sure. Because some of the blacks did come over as indentured, as same as the whites came over as indentured. And they had the same status until slavery was introduced. Slavery was not introduced in this country until the 1600s. So the blacks were coming in during the 1500s, 100 years before slavery was introduced.
Okay. Now, and there was some term being used in those days about hit rights.
About what?
Hit rights. The term hit rights. Could you explain what
I don't understand that term.
You don't understand the term hit rights.
Okay. I can't understand what you're saying, though.
Let me spell it for you. HEADRIGHTS.
No, I don't. No, I'm not a historian that as such. I'm just a social worker who studied a lot of history, so I'm sure that's a very common term for people who know American history, African American history. But I don't know that term myself.
Okay, you mentioned head rights were something they gave to the settlers for coming over. If you were the head of the family, you got rights to so much.
Head rights, yes. Yeah.
You were given,
so what was your question, though?
Whiskey. Well, what did that have to do? How did that play into the role of instituting slavery? As you said, a number of blacks came over indentured, and you might explain to our listeners what you mean by indentured.
Yes. People were brought over here on credit. They didn't have the money to pay for the voyage. And they were brought over by people who did have the money, and they had to work 7 years to pay off that debt. It was standard, 7 years of indentured servitude. And race didn't matter. So blacks took advantage of that as well as whites. And my understanding of how slavery started was in New York and in Virginia. In New York, a slave ran away from his indentured servitude, and he was caught. He was brought back. He was made to serve not just the rest of his 7 years, but for the rest of his life. And so that was the New York version of how slavery got started. But in Virginia, a black slave and a white slave both ran away from their servitude, the indentured servitude. And when they were caught, the white servant was made to serve for the rest of his life. The black indentured servant was made to serve not just the rest of his life, but they used the Bible to say that the sins of the fathers should be visited upon the children. And so from that generation on, blacks were deemed slaves, no matter whether they were ever free or not, they could be brought into slavery. And that sort of introduced the whole system of slavery in this country, in Virginia.
Yeah. The chattel meaning and perpetuity.
Right, exactly.
Not only that individual, but all their guests.
All their ancestors from then on.
All their descendants.
Right,
you
exactly.
You mentioned critical that you have written. Can you tell us the title of that article and where it might be available?
Oh, sure. South Florida Times printed it last weekend. Or is it this weekend? I'm not sure. I think it was last weekend. And the article is called Fort Mose, The Beginning of the Black Heritage Trail in Florida. And it tells a story of how blacks were freed way before the Emancipation Proclamation was established by Lincoln. There were freed blacks in this country who had been slaves.
Who had been enslaved, and they were
right. And so this is and that's the essence of this article, is showing that there were these freed blacks, you know, who basically freed themselves by escaping and going into a system that allowed them to be free.
Okay. Now, and going into Florida, what kind of support were they given by the, well, before I ask that, during that time, there was the War of 1812.
Right, right.
That
was mainly between the British and the Americans. So the blacks participated in the war on the side of the British. Thousands of them left to go to fight with the British. But they were not the same blacks that came to fight with the Spanish. The British were never as benign or as, how shall I say, civilized toward the blacks as the Spanish had been. As a matter of fact, when Christopher Columbus, who eventually became the governor of Mexico, became very vicious. Well, there were slaves in Mexico, black slaves and Indian slaves in Mexico. And Christopher Columbus was the governor there, but he was very ruthless, and he would not just beat them, and he would kill them for not getting enough gold for the crown, the Spanish crown. But the blacks, the Spanish blacks, were able to go to court and able to petition the government, which they did. And they had Christopher Columbus arrested and brought back into Spain in chains. And so there was a very different treatment of blacks by the Spanish during those days. Treatment from what the British were doing.
And you mentioned the city, St. Augustine. Talk to us a little bit about St. Augustine, as it is the oldest city in the nation.
It is the oldest city in the nation, and at that time, it was the second largest city in the South, second to to Charleston, South Carolina. It's about 25 miles south of Jacksonville, Florida. It's right on the Atlantic Ocean, and one of the main attractions there is supposed to be the Fountain of Youth, such as it is. And there are a lot of forts there. And because it was very valuable in terms of slave trade and the interest to the New World, both Spanish and the British fought very hard to claim it. And the Spanish did hold it for many years, and the British were able to take it over in 1763 and ran the Spanish out, and that's when the Spanish went to Cuba and to Central and South America and the Caribbean.
I see. Tell us what you know about the Seminoles and the Seminole Indian Nation and their relationship to Africans there in Florida.
Well, you know, I have a personal relationship with the Seminole Indians because I was born in Florida. I was born in Ocala. And that was one of the main places where the Seminoles went when they left the St. Augustine area. And when I was in high school, one of my jobs was to teach English to the Seminoles. The Seminoles are no longer in that area. Just a handful of them, maybe 300 Seminoles, are left now in this country, and they're all down here in South Florida, in the Miami area.
Okay.
And they're the ones now that have the casinos, and of course they are poor no more because they have a lot of money coming in through the casinos. But they were very interested in helping the blacks at one point. As a matter of fact, there was a chief called Osceola,
okay,
who protected the blacks. Are you need to say something? Who tried to protect the blacks, and he did protect the blacks, and there was an incident of one black woman who was considered very valuable, and she had run away from slavery in Georgia, and they tried to come back to get her, and he was protecting her, and they were going to take her anyway, so he married her and made her his wife. And, of course, that was began a big war because the militia came down, and they eventually captured him and killed him.
You mentioned that the Seminoles are in the money these days. Is there some controversy in that the Seminoles not wanting to share their money and profits with the black Seminoles?
Not in Florida. Blacks seem not to have claim Indian roots for the purpose of getting Indian money. I understand that happens in Massachusetts and in the New England areas where the Indians have casinos and the blacks have now become Indian all of a sudden and are trying to get some of the money, but not in Florida. I've not heard of cases where blacks have tried to go to court or anything like that to press their Indian heritage in order to get some of the money. Although it's a lot of money coming out of the casinos these days.
Yeah. Well, didn't the Seminoles fight with the Confederates? Weren't they at one time in their history slave owners and adopted?
Well, of course they were, but so were blacks. But they were the free blacks also had slaves, especially in Virginia. And some of them were quite ruthless as well. But
okay.
The Seminoles somehow were not vicious with their slaves. They did not do things like separating them from their family and selling them off and things like that or raping them. They were not that. What they did, they sort of treated the slaves the same way as they treat each other. I mean, the slave women worked hard like the Indian women, and the slave men sort of hunt and fish and did the things that the Indian men did. They were not really oppressed as they were if they were slaves of white people or even some of the blacks who were free.
But did not the Seminoles fight with the Confederacy to keep slavery alive and keep the Indians?
Some of them did. And, they fought both sides, and so did the blacks. The blacks fought both sides, and the Indians. Blacks fought with the Confederate and with the Union, and so did the Indians, yeah.
Okay, but the distinction I'm making is that those blacks who might have fought for the slavery dependent nations, and the Seminole had to come in after the Civil War to make treaties with the United States because they were a defeated and conquered nation, and they had to adopt their former slaves into the nations as citizens. Are you familiar with that history?
No, but it's interesting. Yeah, I can imagine it. No.
Okay. Well, and that's, you know, part of that history. And not only, now you mentioned Seminoles there in Florida, and some of those Seminoles were also moved out to Oklahoma.
Oh, yes, yes. A lot of them did, as a matter of fact. They were part of the, Trail of Tears?
Exactly.
Yeah,
now,
a lot of them. As a matter of fact, most of them were pulled up and had to go with that. Yes.
But I understand that there was a group, a band of Seminoles, and I wonder if you know anything about them, who went into the Everglades and who never officially surrendered to the United States. And legally,
the Miccosukees, and they're still in the Everglades.
Yes.
But they're not a large number. I suspect they're not even 500, I don't suppose. Today, but they're right here, you know, maybe 20 miles from where I am at this moment. They have business in the Everglades. They have a casino. They have lots of money, but they still live pretty much as their tradition suggests. They're not flashy. They don't go around driving big cars and stuff like that, and they're still not integrating. They have their schools right there on the reservation. They bring in teachers, and they have a police department there that they bring in and so forth.
We have some callers on the line, but just before we bring them in, you mentioned the phrase the Trail of Tears. Would you explain to our listeners what the Trail of Tears was all about?
Well, my understanding is that the United States militia, the government and military, forced the Indians from the South, including those from Florida, the Carolinas, Georgia, to actually walk across the country to the far and Midwest you know, to settle in barren lands, and a lot of them died along the way. It was just a horrible thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that was the so-called five civilized tribes, which included
right. The
Seminole, the Muscogee Creek, Chickasaw, Choctaw, and Cherokee.
Right. Those are the Cherokee and those are the Carolinas, and the Seminoles are Florida.
Right, and they were.
And some were from Georgia.
They were forced to move west of the Mississippi River.
Right, exactly. They were homesteaders. They had to give up everything.
Yes, they had to give up everything. Gold had been discovered in Georgia, so that what started the forced removal by Andrew Jackson.
Right, exactly.
And okay, do we have callers on the lines? The lines are now open. Callers. I think we had some callers that were standing by that maybe had a question or comment. And by the way, it is called the Trail of Tears, but the Native Americans, as I understand it, actually phrased it the Trail Where We Cried.
Yeah.
And Hollywood apparently twisted it around to the Trail of Tears.
What is so interesting, though, is that the Indians, for the most part, never really wanted to assimilate. They never wanted to take on the white culture or become, anyway, connected to the white culture. That was very different from the blacks, who wanted very much to be integrated. Indians had never asked for integration. They've always fought it.
To some extent, there was a great influx of white traders moving into Indian territories, the Carolinas and Georgia and Florida that you mentioned earlier. And in order to successfully trade with the Indians, they had to marry into the tribes, and that way they were afforded greater opportunity to sell their goods. And that's why you find English names, German names, Scottish names, German, etc., amongst particularly the five civilized tribes.
Yes. And it was interesting, too, the Indians were very welcoming to blacks, to free blacks anyway, and there were at least one black who became an Indian chief. You might have heard about Beckwith, who became an Indian chief
in South Dakota. What about a gentleman by the name of John Horse?
John Horse. I was just reading something about John Horse the other day. John Horse is probably best known because he could learn languages and he could communicate in English as well as in different Indian languages. And he served as an interpreter, for the military and for the government. But he's a black guy.
And who was George Sequoia Gist?
Who was that now?
George Sequoia Gist. Do you know anything about him?
No, I don't.
He has the last name.
What was the last name?
G-I-S-T.
G-I-S-T?
Yes. And it's...
is that Les's ancestor?
That could very well be. He was a Cherokee Indian who developed the written language.
Oh, I see. Okay, no, I didn't know that. I know Leslie has a history of blacks who were freed, who were enslaved, and her grandfather, great-great-grandfather, I guess, being William Tell, that was his brother's name was just G-I-S-T, and he was freed from slavery through the Underground Railroad, but this is through the Harriet Tubman's Underground Railroad.
I see.
By the way, Harriet Tubman also came to St. Augustine, and not during the days of the fort, because that was much later, but she did visit St. Augustine during the Civil War.
Oh, during the Civil War.
Oh, yeah, because, she, you know, as you know, she was very active in the Civil War. She was a nurse. She only spent 10 years as her work as an underground conductor, underground railroad conductor. But she was a nurse throughout the Civil War.
Tell us about your museum. You have a museum there in Florida?
The museum for, yes, at the Fort Mosey has a very nice museum. And it's an interactive museum, and it's underutilized. It's been in existence now for 2 years, and although 400 almost 4.5 million people visit St. Augustine every year, about 1 million being African-Americans, less than 11,000 have ever visited that museum. So that's part of the article, too, to talk about why blacks are not supporting that museum, not going there and getting the history that the museum has to offer.
Well, does that museum have a website? Can we visit that website and learn more about it?
Yeah, I think it does have a website.
Well, if we go Fort Mosey, and could you tell Mosey?
Yeah, Fort Mosey National Park, State Park. And I think you'll get that website, and it'll tell you a lot about that museum.
And spell Mosey for us.
It's M-O-S-E.
M-O-S-E.
It's like Mose, but it's,
okay.
It's pronounced M-O-S-E, but it's pronounced Mose.
Mose.
Yeah, Mose is Spanish.
You're scheduled to be on a panel with Wesley in July. Tell us about that event.
Well, you know, I'm not sure. It has to do with looking at the future of African Americans in this country. And I guess each of us will take a part of that and develop it and sort of project what we what portends for us as we go further into the 21st century.
Okay.
And I understand it's going to be in Orlando, and I don't know a lot about that, but I think Yul Anderson, who's in charge of that, will be on this show, I believe, soon. And he'll be able to tell you more about it.
Okay. Well, we look forward to...
As a matter of fact, he can tell you more about Fort Mosey, too, because I got involved through him.
I see. Now, have you written other articles or books or anything about what was going on there in Florida in reference to the Underground Railroad?
Not in reference to the Underground Railroad. I write a lot about black issues, and if you Google my name, you'll see a lot of stuff that I have written about that. And also, if you Google South Florida Times, and you can see most of the recent stuff I've written about issues regarding black people, African Americans.
Okay, and that's Gilbert Rayford.
Yeah, Gilbert Lanson Rayford, right.
Rayford, and that's spelled R-A-I-F-O-R-D.
Right, R-A-I-F-O-R-D. We have a prison in Florida called Rayford, too, but there's no connection.
There's no connection. I've got a note here from an emailer wanting to know what is, and I'm going to have to spell this for you, P-E-L-I-K-L-A-K-A. H-A.
It sounds like an Indian name, but I don't know what it is.
P-E-L.
Does the note say anything about the context of it? I don't know.
No, never mind. They just wanted to know what it is. And it's spelled, but I don't know that I can really pronounce it. Are there any other events coming up here in the near future? Before July that our listeners might be interested in or that you're going to be involved in?
Well, I can't think of any. You know, I'm retired. I'm 82 years old, so I don't get involved that much with a lot of stuff. So I have no idea, you know. I'm sure there's a lot of stuff going on, but I don't have any plans to be involved in anything else now. I still do a little writing from time to time for the South Florida Times, but that's about it.
Well, certainly, a gentleman of your experience and longevity, what's your take on some of the recent events there in Florida, particularly the Trayvon Martin Zimmerman affair? Is there any way you can put that event into Florida historical perspective?
Well, Florida is interesting. Florida was not really considered the Deep South, and so they've never really understood the importance of black unity, I suppose, as some of the other states have done. There is a lot of racism throughout the state. I mean, really throughout the state. And it used to be subliminal, but now it's just almost blatant. And this is a very good example of blatant racism, you know, where you can kill somebody and not even be arrested if the person is black and you're white.
Mm-hmm.
So that it was very discouraging, you know, the whole incident. And the jury to find Zimmer not guilty. As a matter of fact, I wrote about that before the trial. I wrote even what would happen at the trial, and it was a prediction which I didn't hope would not come true, but it did come true, and because of the nature of the state, it's a very, very racist state.
What was your personal experience there in Florida from childhood to adulthood?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I was born in the country and I was raised in the country, and we had almost no contact with white people. As a matter of fact, they never even crossed my mind. I went to a school that was an academy, and it was a progressive school. It was not like any school that you could think of because we had no textbooks and we had no grades. As
mm-hmm.
such, we didn't have any A's, B's, or something like that, and we didn't have a 7th or 8th or 9th or 10th grade. We just had surveys, and we had cohorts that we were taught in, and all our learning was audio-visual. So it was a different kind of experience. And there were a few whites in it. Even though it was during the days of apartheid in this country, we had some whites. They were Cubans who came over. It was a boarding school. They would come over to this school. But the only time I would see white people is when I would go into town and then just in the stores. And there was just, we had no, no relationships at all with them.
What was the name of the boarding school you went to?
It was called Fezzenden Academy. And it was interesting because Fezzenden Academy was started by, let me start back. In Florida, there was a plantation called Martin, Colonel Martin, who was this different kind of master, but still a master. But he insisted that his slaves, all who wanted to be, who wanted to read and write, could be read and write. Could read and write, and it could be taught to read and write. And he did not use white overseers. His overseers were all black, and he did not permit beatings and stuff like that. And it's a very large plantation north of Ocala. And so at the end of slavery, the people were given land, and they were given, you know, implements to farm the land. But because they had a thirst for education, they also built a school. But they had no money to pay teachers or even to buy books and so forth. And so a church organization called the American Missionary Association came in and provided a lot of the money. And then a man called Fezzenden came from Massachusetts And he brought his wealth with him, and he poured it into that school, and it became an academy. And for 50 years or more, almost 100 years, it existed until we began to have public schools for blacks. Because in the beginning, there were no public schools for blacks in the South. Blacks could go up to the 8th grade, that was it, but they could not get into high school because they didn't have high schools for a while. And if they did, they were so far apart that you would have had a hard time getting to them. And so anyway, this is the school that I attended, and so as I said, there was no opportunity to have any interaction with whites.
You know, it's an extraordinary story, Mr. Rayford. Now, you
I wrote about that too in the Miami, in the South Florida Times. You may want to, if anyone will Google that, they could probably find that as well. As a matter of fact, the archives for our school are in the Olmsted collection there in Tulane, in Tulane University in New Orleans. I was there a couple of months ago, and it's a a very large collection with several dozen boxes of original material there.
Could you name that academy again along with
F-E-S-S-E-N, F-E-S-S-E-N-D-E-N, Fezzedin Academy.
Okay, Fezzedin Academy.
Fezzedin Academy.
Fezzedin.
Yeah, and we had an articulation agreement with all of the black colleges in the United States at the time that any graduate from that academy was automatically admitted into the university of those colleges, you know, for matriculation.
Well, you became a teacher, and that's how you got into college?
No. I was a beatnik for a long time before I came into college. No, I'm 6'8". I'm that tall. And so we were poor, but I was a pretty good student and read a lot. And I got 17 scholarships because I could play basketball.
Oh, okay.
And then I got into college because I could play basketball. I was determined that I would not be working in the hot sun in Florida, and I needed an education. And so that's why I decided to go to Hampton, go to school.
Correct.
And then I graduated, and in the next 5 years after graduation, I became a hippie in New York and didn't do anything but ran around Greenwich Village.
Okay.
Five years.
Do you know if there are any excavations going on around or in Fort Mose?
Oh, any excavation?
Yeah, any excavation?
No. The fort is completely gone now. It's a beautiful park there now. It's a nice place where families can go and have their picnics and go into the museum and get an education. It's kind of hard to find. And it's right off of U.S. 1, 2 miles north of St. Augustine. The St. Augustine Chamber of Commerce does not promote that for some reason. I guess because it's black. But there's a lot of black history in St. Augustine. Lincolnville, for an example, at one point there were 548 buildings in Lincolnville that was on the preservation register.
Wow, that's a lot of buildings.
Yeah, but they're not now because the city of Augustine decided they didn't need that much history and they started tearing them down, so it's not much left there. Still a few, but not nearly as many as they were in the beginning.
So how is the museum supported?
The museum is a state. It's in a state park, so the state of Florida supports it, and there's a nominal fee of $2 admission, but they can't do anything with that because almost no one goes there, not even blacks, and it's really a shame because it's a great museum. It's small, but it's very, very impressive.
you also mentioned, and I want to make sure I got this right, the South Florida Times. That's a newspaper there.
Right. It serves Dade County, Broward County, and Palm Beach County.
Okay.
It's a black newspaper.
And some of your articles can be found there in the archives.
Well, in that paper, it's on. No, it's not the archives in New Orleans, and that's
the
archives.
Okay.
But I do have my own papers here in Black. What is it called now? South Florida Black Archives. Yeah, I have you can Google that too. My papers are there here in Miami in an archive here.
South Florida Black Archives.
Right.
Okay. Well, we're just about out of time. Is there any closing remarks you would like to leave with our listeners?
Well, no, except we have to try to continue to struggle on and not be afraid to call racism racism. You know, it's when we stop doing that, when it starts saying you're playing the race card, and you get scared, you know, it's the only card you have, so you've got to play what your hand calls for.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Rayford, for joining us. It's been a very enlightening and informing presentation for myself and I'm sure for our audience. And we will certainly be looking up some of these archives here to explore your writings and get more into the history of the Underground Railroad there in Florida. And perhaps later on this summer, after you've participated in some of the events that are coming up with our director, Leslie Gist, you will come back and join us again.
It would be my pleasure.
I think I would very much like to talk to you again. And I want to close. Rayford, did you play professionally basketball?
No, I only played at Hampton. You know what? I'm really not such an athlete. I'm more of a scholar than an athlete. But
okay.
I love basketball. And I guess if, I don't know. I was skinny then. I'm not skinny now, but I was very skinny then. And so I was not a Shaq. And I suppose if I had a little more weight on me and I had more interest in basketball, I probably would have become professional. I'm tall enough, you know, 6'8", and during the days when I grew up, you know, I was very tall.
Very tall. Okay,
yeah.
Last call for any callers out there. Time to speak up. If you're on the line and you've got a question or comment.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi, this is Ewell Anderson. And Dr. Rayford, I heard your interview this evening and just thought
you did
a great job covering the importance of St. Mose and what it means to African Americans in this country. And I applaud you for being on the interview this evening.
Thank you. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Sir. Any other callers on the line?
I heard another beep, but I guess it's gone.
Yeah, it is. Okay, we're out of time. Again, Mr. Rayford, thank you very much for joining us, and hopefully we'll have you back in the future.
Thank you very much, and I'll
okay.
be happy to come back. Okay.
Great.
Bye now.
Good night, everybody. Good night.